In Nairobi, capital of Kenya, Europeans and Africans still walk the streets in fear of the dreaded Mau Mau. For it is that band of fanatics whose bloody deeds have cast a dark shadow across the face of Kenya.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, exploring the issues that impact our community, providing an in-depth analysis of the latest national discussion, and hitting the issues hard in a thoughtful, passionate, and provocative way. We have another thought-provoking show for you this morning. In this installment of our three-part series, The Movement and Voices of the African Diaspora, we're going to explore the liberation and independence movements that swept across Africa, the Caribbean, and of course, America. We rightfully recognize and celebrate the giants of the civil rights movement. But as I've said, Black History Month is more than celebrated individuals, but a movement and a spirit that inspired the oppressed to pursue freedom's cause by whatever means available. Some methods were more bloody, more violent. So today, we're going to delve into the movements that were bloody, the movements in which armed resistance and even killing was the alternative method of gaining freedom for Africans of the diaspora, here on Braze 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Usually when we think about the radical voices of the civil rights and Black Power movements, we immediately think about Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, Elgin Cleaver, Fred Hampton, and a bevy of other voices that sought a more aggressive approach against racism and oppression. These familiar names are certainly indicative of a radical spirit that was sweeping across Africa in the mid-20th century. But armed resistance and the use of violence and killing as a method, a modus operandi, as a viable tool against oppression, was not readily embraced by the leaders and generals of the civil rights and freedom movements in the United States. Across the Atlantic, however, the spirit of freedom and rebellion was justifiably more violent, as countries and entire swaths of land on the African continent were firmly in the grips of European colonizers. The fervor to break oppression, racism, and colonial rule reached a fever pitch and crescendoed into a violent insurgency that swept across the motherland. Nowhere was this more evident than Kenya. Kenya's freedom fighters, the Mau Mau, set ablaze a rebellion that stoked fear and trepidation in the hearts and minds of British colonizers and the whites that stole and settled lands that belonged to the people of Kenya. Colonial rule by European settlers, coupled with a system of racism, discrimination, servitude, and slave wage labor, sparked a passive resistance movement in 1946. But when the white settlers and the British colonial powers responded with absolute brutality, torture, and a systematic campaign to further encroach upon the dignity of the indigenous people of Kenya, passive resistance erupted into an all-out rebellion in 1952. The Mau Mau, which consisted of the largest ethnic group, the Kikuyu people, waged a campaign to rid Kenya of its racist colonial oppressors. The Mau Mau, ranging from a fighting force of 30,000 to 1 million Kikuyu, was unrelenting in their fight against colonial rule. The military wing of the Mau Mau launched guerrilla attacks on the white settlers that prompted a brutal response from the British. The settlers' description and characterization of the Mau Mau contained all of the expected racist elements and bigotry, but their most pronounced response was the fear of being brutally murdered by an insurgent force bent on extricating them from the land.
In Nairobi, capital of Kenya, Europeans and Africans still walk the streets in fear of the dreaded Mau Mau. For it is that band of fanatics whose bloody deeds have cast a dark shadow across the face of Kenya. A week ago, the people of Kenya read of the death of Chief Nderi, murdered by terrorists. And now, as they watch the funeral of this wise and peaceful chieftain, They wonder, where next will the Mau Mau strike?
But for all the fear and racist propaganda against the Mau Mau, there was a different perspective from Africa and from abroad, particularly from Americans who understood and appreciated the Mau Mau movement. Here's Malcolm X.
And I must take time right here to point out that that's a good study in itself. It took the Mau Mau to bring independence not only to Kenya. It took the Mau Mau to bring independence to most of Africa. When a man is sad over his miserable condition, he does nothing to change it. Sadness doesn't change anything. It's only when he gets mad that he changes. It takes madness to change it. One of the things I noticed when I was in Africa traveling around, I noticed many Africans who were still colonized, still exploited, still oppressed. And one of the things all of them had in common was they seemed sad. They would discuss their sad plight, but they weren't ready to really do anything to change it. They seemed to be waiting on some miracle. But the contrasting difference between them and what happened in Kenya, the Kikuyu got mad. They just didn't care what the consequences were. They knew they cared nothing about legality, morality, or anything. All they knew was that they were being oppressed unjustly, illegally, immorally. And because of this unjust, illegal, immoral oppression that they were suffering, they came to the conclusion that they would be within their rights to bring it to a halt by any means necessary. And they adopted those means. When they began to use these means in their struggle for freedom, the press of the West began to project them in a very negative image. They were freedom fighters. They were African patriots fighting against oppression. They weren't fighting against a legal government. They weren't fighting against a moral society. They were fighting against a colonial power, an imperialist power, a vulturous society. And this vulturous society, with its control of the press, And its allies here in the United States, who also control much of the press, projected these freedom fighters, these African patriots, in the image of savages, cannibals, terrorists, some as criminals, actually. And they projected Jomo Kenyatta in an image worse than all. But the Mau Mau weren't image conscious. They weren't status seekers. They weren't social climbers. They wanted freedom. And they came to a conclusion at a point in their journey that the only way they was to get it was the way they did it. And they got it. I admire them for that. I respect them for that.
Here's an excerpt from Robert B. Edgerton's book, Mau Mau, An African Crucible, from page 144. For white Kenyans, Mau Mau was the embodiment of an atavistic return to the savagery they believed had pervaded all of Africa before European colonization. In their view, Europeans had put a veneer of civilization over African magic, cannibalism, murder, and sexual perversion. But now it was clear to them just how thin that veneer had been. For the whites to protect themselves and to protect other Africans not yet infected by the disease of Mau Mau, as they thought of it, the movement would have to be crushed, and those who had joined it cleansed of their evil or killed. In words identical to those heard on the American frontier a century earlier, some whites insisted, quote, "The only good Cayuque is a dead Cayuque," end quote, and they called for the extermination of the entire Kikuyu people. Most white Kenyans would not go that far, but they were determined to exterminate Mau Mau. End quote. The Mau Mau rebels were not just targeting white settlers. They were equally, if not more, vicious in their attacks on Africans that supported the British regime. In other words, the Mau Mau killed their own people justifiably because they supported their British oppressors. Some of the leaders of the Mau Mau were Huyu Aitote, or General China, Tom Maboya, Dedan Kamathi, and Jomo Kenyatta inspired the Kikuyu and all the blacks of Kenya to reject colonial rule and aspire for independence. It's worth remembering that freedom and independence movements were not exclusive to Africa. America or the 20th century. Take, for example, Boussa's Revolution in Barbados. We're all familiar with the beauty of the West Indies. Hundreds of thousands of people travel to the West Indies for vacation, rest, and relaxation, and to just enjoy the natural beauty that exists throughout the Caribbean. But in 1816, the beautiful island of Barbados was settled by white slave owners who used the island as home and a personal paradise as the slaves worked the land and crops to benefit those white slave owners. The African-born Bajan slave, Boussa, used his considerable charisma to organize and lead an island-wide slave revolt that claimed the lives of several plantation owners and successfully wrested control of half the island from their slave masters. On Easter Sunday, April 14th, Boussa and thousands of island slaves battled for the control of the island. The Boussa Revolution was eventually quelled, but his relentless attacks and savvy organizational skills clearly defined the British hold on Barbados as uncertain and tenuous. But Boussa's revolution was preceded by the Haitian Revolution, initially organized by Dudley Boukman and led by military general and genius Toussaint Louverture. The storied history of the Haitian Revolution served as a template for subsequent slave rebellions in the Caribbean and the United States. It was the hushed whispers of revolt in Haiti that inspired the waves of rebellions to follow. For Toussaint's bold military campaign, which claimed the lives of over 100,000 French and British soldiers, paved the way for Haiti to be the first independent black country in 1804. Travel with me to the Gold Coast, which is present-day Ghana, for there was a 100-year effort by the Asante Kingdom to stave off imperialism, colonial rule, and racism. As the British was expanding colonies throughout the continent and the Western Hemisphere, the Asante Kingdom mounted a defense against foreign British and European invaders that would last for nearly 100 years. From 1806 to 1901, the Asante Kingdom was locked in confrontation with European powers who sought sturdier economic and political power in Africa. But the Asante possessed a spirit of rebellion that led to a bevy of significant military victories against the European powers. With a tenacity that stretched across decades, the Asante defended the Gold Coast with robust fervor. Eventually, the Asante succumbed to defeat as the British solicited help from Nigerian warriors and superior weaponry helped to win the day and end the near 100-year stalemate. As the civil rights movement in the United States was tearing down segregation and the movement's leaders were maturing in their articulation of the poverty and racism that divided the nation, the Zanzibar Revolution was nearing a crescendo on Zanzibar Island. The British were loosening their grip on their colonial states as independence movements in Africa and the West Indies sapped resources to maintain control of their satellite countries. The Zanzibar Island, which borrowed its form of governance from its former British fathers, muddled through a series of parliamentary elections that reserved two-thirds of the seats for Arabs and Indians, but excluded the African Afro-Shirazi Party. This intentional political exclusion inspired a relationship to develop between the African Afro-Shirazi Party and the Umma Party, a left-wing movement whose voice on the Zanzibar Island was of significance. In 1964, 800 revolutionaries, led by ASP member John Okello, overran Zanzibar's police force. Weapons were confiscated and used to overthrow the government. Upward of 20,000 Arab and South Asian civilians were killed in a campaign of reprisal and freedom. There are a number of noted slave rebellions in the 18th and 19th century in the United States that burned fear in the hearts and minds of slave owners throughout the slave states. From Denmark Vesey to Gabriel Prosser's failed revolts to Nat Turner's bloody campaign, which saw several dozen slave owners and their families brutally and, in my opinion, given the context and brutality of slavery, justifiably killed. John Brown's attack on Harper's Ferry, Virginia, was also an indication that whites and the abolitionist movements violently objected to slavery and gave their lives in the ending of that sadistic system. It is that spirit of rebellion and revolt that led to Tacky's War in Jamaica in 1760, which claimed the lives of 60 slave plantation owners. It was that spirit of rebellion that inspired the First Maroon War in 1739 that paved the way for enslaved Africans to win freedom from the Europeans and establish free communities in the mountainous interior of Jamaica, despite the frequent skirmishes between the British and the Maroons that led the British to concede free states on that island. Revolutionary fervor stretched to the islands of Guyana, the former Demerara Esquibo colony. A revolt there in 1823, led by Jack Gladstone and his father Kwamina, led an army of enslaved Africans to fight against their slave masters, eventually securing freedom from the British. The Battle of Ethiopia, the French-Algerian War, the Portuguese Colonial War, and the independence movements that swept across the globe had one strong and enduring purpose: freedom.
But when I leave, you can remember I said the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're gonna have to keep on saying that. You're gonna have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the big.
No, the civil rights movement didn't culminate into a bloody uprising by African Americans, but there were radical voices calling on a more aggressive approach in our march for freedom. The Black Panther and Black Liberation Fronts represented a radical black nationalism that provided a strong juxtaposition to the sober and nonviolent calls for freedom. Donning black leather coats, black berets, black boots, and armed with shotguns, the Black Panther Party and some affiliated groups gave a picture of militancy that whites in this country were not used to seeing.
I want you to know that I want you to see. If you ever think about me, and if you think about me, you ain't gonna do no revolutionary act, forget about me. I don't want myself on your mind if you're not gonna work for the people. Like we always said, if you ask to make a commitment at the age of 20, and you say, I don't want to make that commitment only because of the simple reason that I'm too young to die, I want to live a little bit longer. What you did already.
You have to understand that people have to pay the price of peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not to struggle, then you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it.
That was Fred Hampton. Here's H-Rep Brown and Stokely Carmichael.
See, unlike America would have us believe, the greatest problem confronting this country today is not pollution and bad breath. It's black people. It's black people. See, that's just one of the big lies that America tells you and that you go for because you chumps. You go for it. One of the lies that we tell ourselves is that we are making progress. But here is chairs empty. We're not making progress. We tend to equate progress with concessions. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that astronaut, you say we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him? They gave you Walter Washington of Washington, D.C., and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. But a lot of you running around talking about you Democrats, and the Democrats got you in the biggest trick going. They tell you it ain't our fault, it's the Dixocrats. No such thing as a Dixocrat. The only difference between George Wallace and Lyndon Johnson is one of them's wife got cancer. That's the only difference. You go for it because you chumps. You go for it. The only thing that's going to free Huey is gunpowder. Black powder. When black people become serious about the revolutionary struggle that they are caught up in, whether they recognize it or not, when they begin to go down and knock off people who are oppressing them and begin to render these people impotent, that's when the revolutionary struggle unfolds. Not until. We have to recognize who our major enemy is. The major enemy is not your brother, flesh of your flesh and blood of your blood. The major enemy is the honky and his institutions of racism. That's the major enemy. That is the major enemy. And whenever anybody prepares for revolutionary warfare, you concentrate on the major enemy. We're not strong enough to fight each other and also fight him. We will not fight each other today. We will not fight each other. There will be no fights in the black community among black people. There will just be people who will be off. There will be no fights. There will be no disruptions. We are going to be united. We must begin to develop, number one, and this is the most important thing we can do as a people.
It was a sorely needed picture as police brutality, lynchings across the South, and the reign of the Ku Klux Klan went unchecked. The country needed an alternative view of African Americans who appeared to only answer hostility with docile and less threatening demeanor. What won the day, of course, was nonviolent action, but whites in this country had to confront the reality that a powder keg of radicalism inspired by the independence movements in Africa and other parts of the globe could erupt in the United States at any moment. There were no guerrilla campaigns or mass killing of whites during the late 60s and early 70s when the more radical voices developed a clearer message and an articulation of the issues. Instead, the militants of the Black Power movement used their considerable organizational and rhetorical skills to feed the hungry, defend and patrol communities, and go head-to-head in the arena of ideas. The Black Power movement called out America's hypocrisy, even as FBI and the other spy apparatus of our government barreled down on them. So, the freedom we enjoy today is the result of the movements, both nonviolent and violent, which swept across the globe. And as I've said, there's a storied history of Africa that is all too often ignored during Black History Month. The giants of the civil rights movement are rightfully celebrated, and the focus on the achievements of African Americans is an appropriate part of the Black History Month experience. But without Africa and its struggles and our ties to what many in the African diaspora call the motherland, our history and journey is incomplete. I celebrate the entirety of our movements. It's interconnected and intertwined, and our oppressors needed to see a clear juxtaposition to appropriately adjust their behaviors. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I hope you enjoyed our second installment of the movements and voices of the African diaspora, armed resistance. Some of the information in today's broadcast is available on Wikipedia, AfricanHolocaust.net, the book The Mau Mau, An African Crucible by Robert Edgerton, and Seize the Time, written by Black Panther founder Bobby Seale. The audio clips of news footage about the Mau Mau and audio for speeches from Malcolm X, H. Rhett Brown, Stokely Carmichael, who changed his name to Kwame Ture, and of course Fred Hampton, is also available on YouTube. And I provide these resources because it's important for all of you to understand that this information is readily available. It's available on YouTube. It's available in news footage and news clippings. All of this stuff is available. Part of my frustration, especially with the younger generation of African Americans, is that a real grasp and appreciation of this information is not strongly encouraged, at least to my satisfaction. You'd be surprised by how little people know about the African liberation movements, for instance, the Mau Mau movements in particular. As impactful and as interconnected these movements were to the struggle of the entire African diaspora, you'd think that there would be greater emphasis on educating our people, especially our young folks, about these absolutely critical movements. There's no reason, no excuse whatsoever, that our young people have never heard of the Mau Mau. or the Zanzibar Revolution, or the Portuguese Colonial War, or the impact European colonization in various areas of the African continent and on other parts of the world, such as Australia and the Caribbean, how these colonial powers, how they impacted the African diaspora. It's especially disheartening that these issues receive little attention during Black History Month. We need to change that. And of course, I'm committed to providing this kind of information, especially during February, especially during Black History Month. And if the rhetoric, because I know it makes a lot of folks uncomfortable when you talk about killing and all of those kinds of things, but if the rhetoric and the agenda of the Black Panther Party of the past and other affiliated groups, or the brutality of the Mau Mau, or Nat Turner's Rebellion, or any of the slave revolts that took the lives of slave owners and the oppressors of our ancestors, well, then so be it. This was a reality. This was the reality of our people, of our ancestors. The story must be told. This is an integral part of our history. These stories are part of the fabric and oral and written mosaic that make up the African diaspora. And I'm proud to be in the position, as I've always been, to be honest with you, to present that storied history to you. Next week, in our final installment of The Movements and Voices of the African Diaspora, the written word of our liberation struggle, as seen through the eyes of our authors, poets, and exponents of verbal revolution. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. This show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.